need somebody.
Help!
Not just anybody.
Help!
You know I need someone.
Help!
Wake up, Denver.
Younger, so much younger than today.
Nothing like a little Beatles song to get you going on a Sunday morning.
Especially this one.
Yeah, this will help you get ready for singing hymns later.
At Highline Community Church at 10:30.
Hopefully.
I wish I'd have written this song. We happen to love the Beatles. I'm actually a Beatles expert, a Bible expert, a blackjack expert, and a baseball expert.
Not necessarily in that order.
Exactly. I don't know who wrote this, Paul.
I don't know. You're the expert.
Okay, so not so much of an expert. I'm Bo Mitchell. This is Bob Belts. Our program is You Get the Blessing. Thanks for listening again, everybody. We appreciate hearing from you, that you actually understand what we're trying to do here, which is introduce you to folks that we think are impacting this community for the cause of Christ and for good things. So that's the case today. And this program today is about second starts, new beginnings, forgiveness. And we all need a little of that, don't we, Bob?
Absolutely.
So I was sitting with Joe, our guest, just discussing this one day and said, would you come share this on the radio program? So Joe and Heidi Roberts, welcome to our show.
Thank you. It's great. Good to be here.
You're going to have to lean in a little bit, or okay, it's going to only be my voice you hear. I would push that mic back and forth and share it. So we'll start with you, Joe. Let's talk a little bit about your background and how you met Christ, and then Heidi.
Well, okay, good. I'm a Nebraska boy, so I was...
Get over it, pal.
Yeah, born in Kansas, down in the southwest part of Kansas, but then moved to Nebraska, and I was 2 years old, went to a cattle ranch with my parents and three brothers, and went to a one-room school called Nunda School. That's where I got my education up until the time I was about six. And one of those summer vacations... my mother, I was just talking with her this weekend about that experience. So she thought we ought to go to a Bible school, and because that's where she first learned about Jesus and about God. So she took us to a Methodist Bible school during the summer, and that's when I heard the gospel kind of presented, saying, "Hey, if you're going to, you got two choices you can make. You can either go down this big wide road, which is filled with people, and it's going downhill, and it was on a flannel graph, and it described hell, because there's all kinds of fire and stuff going on down there." And then I was about 9 years old, I guess, at the time, and then she said, "But there is another way, and that is to go up this narrow road. It goes up through a mountain and by a cross, and on that cross is where Jesus died for you. And if you believe that Jesus actually lived and died, and you believe in him, well, then you can go up this narrow way, but it'll lead to eternal life." And so as a nine-year-old, I thought, well, gee, that makes pretty good sense. I don't think I want to go down that busy road. I think I'll take the tough road up the hill. And so I just made a commitment. At 9 years old, no one else in my family went to a church or were really Bible believers at the time, but it certainly made a profound difference on me. Yeah.
Bob Belts is the best Bible teacher I know of in the world. So, Bob, explain what he just explained quickly in theological terms.
I thought he did it really well, frankly, you know. But yeah.
Why do we have a need to pick those roads?
Well, you know, in life we make a lot of decisions like that. But, you know, Christ is the ultimate, you know, dividing point in a sense, because, you know, when we come into a relationship with him and understand who he is and what he's done on our behalf, and then face this moment of decision, really. And whereas, you know, we sometimes say there's really actually three responses in a sense, because sometimes people reject that and other times people neglect it. And I think maybe there's more people that simply neglect their relationship with God than, you know, blatantly reject it. But the correct or the, you know, the other option is to say yes and to open our lives to Christ and begin this spiritual journey that Joe's talking about. So, and Jesus really, you know, talked about, you know, obviously the lesson you were learning was where he talked about the two ways, the broad path that leads to destruction or the narrow path that leads to life.
And my daughter came to Christ the same way. She was young like you were, and I believe kids can't understand the difference. And she came home and said, I don't want to go that way. How do I get this way? And my wife said, pray this prayer. And I think it's stuck. She's in.
Yeah, I think sometimes kids actually understand it clearer than adults because they don't have a lot of the misconceptions and, you know, things that adults stumble over. And like you're saying, I think sometimes a kid can say, well, why would I not do that? You know, and there's an innocence. And I think that's why Jesus even said that we need to become like children to enter the kingdom. And I think that's what he's talking about.
I actually had never heard it in the Methodist church, and Don Reavers here in town when I was in high school explained that simplicity of it to me. And I remember saying, why wouldn't everybody do
yeah,
that?
Yeah, that's right.
He said, well, let's just talk about you, Bo. How about, let's get you figured out
everybody,
first.
Everybody, yeah.
How about you, Heidi? Yeah. Tell us about your background a little bit.
I grew up in Central California, one of six kids, a wonderful Catholic family, and my mom's faith was and still is exemplary. You know, it was just the Catholicism for me was a normal way of faith, but there was always this fear, you know, this that, you know, I didn't have a positive image of God. And having gone through the motions, I went to a university in Santa Barbara, and my second year, I dropped my major and took subjects I wanted to. So I was taking religion, philosophy, and psychology all in the same term.
Religion,
that can either be very confusing or very good. So,
and there was this wonderful cliff near my dorm, you know, that it was very appropriate, you know, looking, contemplating my navel as it were. Fast forward, when I met Joe in 1968, I went home that night and told my roommates, I said, this one's different, and I couldn't put my finger on it, you know. I was just
handsome.
Oh, yeah, apart from looks, but there's just something different about his character. Fast forward another 8 years from there, one of my Santa Barbara dorm mates wanted to have a reunion before we moved to England. We had an assignment in 1976. So, in the meantime, she had lost her husband in a tragic plane crash, and we were all at university together. And just as a memorial to Bob, she said, now just come to church with us. The Christmas before, they sent us a letter that they had been born again. I said, anybody but Connie and Bob. of all people, oh, you know, what is this world coming to? So, at this service, I went very begrudgingly. I remember going, it was in a school of all things. I mean, I thought churches only existed in churches. And I was watching all these people come out. Must have been 1,000 people coming out of the first service, good looking football cheerleader type things. And I thought, are these Christians? And the gospel was so simple. There is a heaven, there's a hell, and the only way is through Jesus. And next thing I found myself being prayed for. And, you know, it was just, why didn't somebody tell me? So Joe was in England at the time trying to find accommodation for the family. And without internet, mobile phones, anything, the only way I could communicate with him was through a letter. And bursting, I thought, that's it. You know, he's one of those Christians. And, you know, praise God, you know, that was such a pivotal time. And my mom still kind of struggles with it. Three of my siblings have also become born again. So it's kind of the Catholic versus the Christian mentality, which is okay. So the simplicity was alarming. I didn't someone tell me, and it was there every Sunday in the liturgy, in the missal, in the confirmation, the baptism, the, you know, all the things we went through.
Just wasn't your time yet.
No, no.
So Bob, actually it's out there, and really, I mean, I heard it for 16 years in the Methodist Church, heard the words, but never understood what was being said till Don Reverts explained it to me.
And I thought that as Heidi was talking, and you know, for some of our listeners that might not understand some of the religious language of born again, you know, it really comes from John chapter 8 and this encounter that Jesus had actually with a very religious guy. So kind of fits in with what you're talking about. He knew the, particularly the Old Testament. He was a Pharisee and a member of the Sanhedrin. His name was Nicodemus. And the Bible says he came to Jesus at night, and Jesus could see that this guy was trying to put the pieces together. And Jesus, you know, said to him, you know, that unless you're born again, talking about a spiritual rebirth, and actually the word that's used there means from above, so that there's this, you know, new kind of a life that we can have. And Jesus says to this very religious guy that knew the Bible, was doing all the right things, that unless you have this experience, you'll never see the kingdom of God. So it's a very important concept. And sometimes I think in our culture, it's been made fun of, you know, by people that probably don't understand what it really means. Are you one of those born agains? You know, you'll hear things like this. And of course, you know, when they say that, if you are, it's a wonderful thing to you, because you realize that that's, you know, how you've really entered into a real relationship with God. So, you know, so that's when you open your life to Christ and invite him in, that you experience a new spiritual birth and have this born again experience.
And I thought growing up, they were saying bored again. And I would sit in church, and about halfway through the sermon, when I was really bored, I would think, I'm getting it. I'm bored again. This guy's done it to me now every week. Okay, Joe, what about you guys now falling in love and getting married? Give us that piece of the story.
Well, that was really fun. I was going to the United States Air Force Academy down there. That was one of the things that came out of my new Christian faith, really, is I started getting some pictures of what I should be doing with my life. And one of them was that I was going to go fly, and I was going to go to overseas. I was going to be in other places. And the third one was that I was going to be used to talk about God, but in a business type of environment, where it wasn't in church, it was actually in a business type environment. Now, all those pieces, I didn't know how they're going to fit together. But the first thing was, I went to the Air Force Academy. A recruiter came by, and so in 1964, I started a career there. And in 1968, just before we graduated, Heidi and I met on a blind date. Yeah, so again, one of these things where God plans things even before we know. And boy, we hit it off straight away. And within 2 weeks, we were engaged, and I was going to Vietnam afterward as a pilot. So we knew we had to make decisions quickly. So in 6 months, right during the middle of our pilot training, we got married.
2 weeks?
2 weeks.
So you were in heat.
We were. We had.
I don't mean her. I'm talking to you, Buster.
We had 8 dates, I think, was all we had.
And actually, I'm joking. Mine was, I got engaged in 3 weeks.
3 weeks, okay. There you
been
go.
Married 44 years.
Well, we had 46 on 47, yeah. So
all right.
It works sometimes, doesn't it?
When God puts it together, it works great.
It does, works great, yeah. And yet our spiritual walk is kind of funny. We're looking back at it now. As Heidi said, she was Catholic, so sometimes we'd go to Catholic church. I was obviously Methodist, so I'd go to Methodist church every once in a while. So when we start having kids, we didn't know which one to go, so we'd go to both, really. And she kept trying to figure me out, and I didn't ever understand exactly her faith or what it was based on. I knew she was a God-fearer.
Hang on just a second. Why complex, Bob? Just explain a little. What does that mean? Catholic, Baptist, Methodist, Presbyterian.
You know, we always like to use that concept of the core and the package. There's kind of a core of truth about Christ and coming into a relationship with him, having faith, making that decision. And it gets packaged a lot of different ways. And, you know, usually, you know, Baptist, Presbyterian, Catholic, whatever, those are the packages. And sometimes, unfortunately, people get so tied up in the package that they don't get to the core, you know. So I think that's, you know, if you have two people that are coming from really different backgrounds, you have to eventually get to the heart of the matter and the things that are really important and the things that are, you know, not quite as important as that core truth about Christ.
And I've always said you should go to church wherever the minister points you to Christ and wherever the worship experience points you to Christ. Yeah. So that could be a Catholic priest. It could be a Methodist minister.
Yeah, too right.
So yeah. You guys ended up being Captists.
Very much. That's right. Captists, that's right. The real walk in faith, though, came when we went to England. I was assigned to England after had gone through Vietnam. Was back as an instructor pilot, and then we arrived in about 10 years after we were married, something like that, into England. And that's when Heidi then became a Christian. That's when we really started to move on into the things of the Lord. Really, that for us was kind of our real spiritual birth, you know, in terms of really saying, hey, I'm committed to what God's going to do in our lives.
So jump forward now, whichever one of you wants to begin with when some trouble started.
Okay. Heidi, do you want to start there? Okay. My recollection of it was that we'd, again, gone through this period of time, and I never was satisfied with just going in the Air Force career. I wanted to kind of have business for ourselves. So we kind of did that. And so I left the Air Force. That was a real trauma for Heidi because she had married this guy who was going to go into the Air Force. I had a career plan for me, but I chose to kind of come out. And I took to heart too much that the two become one, because then I started making the decisions which I thought God was saying in our lives, and kind of what you were saying earlier last week, if you remember, you were saying you get committed so much, we just expect our families to go along with us, and that's what Heidi kind of had to do, and that's really when the trouble started, because I was making decisions which I thought was based upon what God wanted us to do, but she was kind of left hanging, and I just didn't take good care of her, and so out of that, she said, "Well, I've got to get some answers for myself," and even though she's a Christian, she turned to drink, and that's what she did. Yeah.
Felt unsafe, and felt she had to go somewhere, and that's what she did.
No one's going to listen to me. How am I going to do this? I've got to get some answers, and unfortunately, that's what she did. She started drinking heavily.
So we're talking to Joe and Heidi Roberts here today. We're talking about marriage, we're talking about Christian marriage, and when things start running in the ditch. So if you're listening today and can nod your head and say, yeah, I'm either in the ditch or heading there myself right now, then you can identify with what they're saying. Mm-hmm. So, Heidi, how much did you drink?
It depended on the extent to which I was not heard. Mm-hmm. And almost proportionate. So if Joe would hear my point of view, or, you know, the cries of my heart, you know, the bottle could. So it, you know, it kind of had its ebbs and flows, you know, it's circumstantial.
Did you become an alcoholic?
Oh yeah. With our Air Force social life, you know, alcohol was part of the scene. But one thing I've and asked many often, almost 14 years down the road of sobriety, is when did I turn the corner? I can remember the point in time where I thought, you know, stuff it. one of the major challenges I had, I tried to have Joe respect my point of view. The church, we were quite close to our minister and his wife. They didn't see my point of view. It was just, I was trying to be all things to all people. And, you know, it was that sense of loneliness, isolation, being and not being heard, I think, was the big issue. But the bottle heard me.
Mm, okay. Now, you're quite beautiful woman, which our listeners can't observe. Did your alcoholism affect your speech, or why the struggle with the speech?
Oh, part of I've often said that I got to the point I thought I've got to become my own person. I would say it's 45 emptiness syndrome. So in true Alki fashion, a friend asked me if I wanted to become an aerobics instructor for the YMCA. Sure, you know, at least I could do my own thing. And went through a fast-forward, very intense training program, so it was courtesy of aerobics. So there I was, alcoholic aerobics instructor. You know, good one. So I've had tests and so on. It was just projecting. I taught for 3 years. So it's just
taught, just to teach, she's taught. She, and through Aki fashion as well, she would have six sessions a day, an hour along each day, where she would be raising her voice levels to talk to groups of people going through it.
Gotcha.
And then she'd go out and have drink a bottle, you know, before she'd come home at night. Yeah, so it's again that whole thing which goes on in the lives of most, I think, people who are alcoholics, is that it's like they have two parts of their life, you know, so the switch is on one way or the switch is on the other. So she would just be so committed to that, and then on the next moment, you know, she would just be, she'd be collapsed in bed.
Wow.
Completely inebriated.
So that's where my voice went.
In that combination of things, that's where this happened.
I can't blame the alcohol. It was just intense aerobics. Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
If you interrupt her again, by the way, Joe, she's going to start drinking again.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I'm just water on me. You've had your drink.
That's right.
So tell us how this started turning for y'all then. So she feels unsafe, goes into the alcoholism, goes into the aerobic instructor mode, and somehow God not only saved it, he made it great. We got just that long to go, and let's share how we got back together.
I think as everyone knows in the, who's had someone that's an alcoholic in their family, it continues to get worse and worse until it gets to the point almost of death. And that's where it went for Heidi. She got so bad within the whole thing that she was at the point of death. And it was only through a Christian friend of mine who said, look, you've got to lay down the law and say, look, either you're going to live or you're going to live without me. And so I had to make the choice of actually walking away and saying, Heidi, if you take one more drink, because there's so much deceit, there's so much lying that's going on in that whole thing. And it's not just from Heidi, it's from actually just the alcohol, really, just kind of, you know, so the trust levels are really low. So he said, you've got to set some boundaries and say, that's enough, you've got to walk away. And so we did. And as a result, something clicked in Heidi, and we had agreed that she would go to a rehab center, which she then got involved in the rehab center. And I tell you, that's what saved us. You know, that's what is amazing. It was run by the YMCA, and it was such a fantastic
Salvation Army.
Salvation Army was okay. Good. Okay, you want to carry on what that experience was like?
Just to back up a bit, I had two quite intentional suicide attempts. The first one was, yeah, I just had it. You know, I wasn't afraid of dying because I knew I was going to heaven. It was just the living part that I couldn't handle. So it was not a cry for help. Some people think it is. I just wanted to check out. So I came to, and I thought, oh, I'm still here.
Now, wait, I had trouble understanding. Did you just say you had two suicide attempts?
Oh, yeah, very intentional. The second one, we moved from the east of England across to the western part.
And you weren't messing around. You were serious.
I was very serious.
Okay.
Very, very serious.
And that's how low you can sink in this.
Part of a passion I have is the church couldn't help. And you know, maybe I was looking to the church for God or whatever. I prayed. I had all kinds of prayers. I was everything, and I couldn't comprehend being born again, spirit-filled, and an alcoholic. And I remember my last thought, the last suicide attempt was, okay, God, you know, now or never, you've got to fix this, nothing happens. So I came to an emergency. Fast forward, I realized now that alcoholism is a disease, it's an illness, it It's not a guilt trip. There's no shame. And my passion remains to other Christians who feel just like I did. You know, there is a solution. So my solution I found through a support group is I drink, I die. I had to make a choice. So, you know, that goes with hitting a rock bottom is you pass the point of no return. So it's a daily reprieve. It's a daily prayer, you know, every morning. So it's by the grace of God. The coin or the key phrase that I heard, you know, I can't, God can.
So wow. I can't, God can.
And so I'll let him.
Wow. Joe, so, you guys are in a good spot now, aren't you?
We're in a great spot. In fact, we look back at this as being the best thing that ever happened to us. Yeah, that an amazing way. Because now we started communicating. It was a real heads-up call for us to start really going through it. And it forced us into God, because we didn't have family around us, because we were, you know, 6,000 miles away from our family. So all we had was each other and God. And therefore, God was able to kind of deal with me, help me to change the way I behave toward her. And it's still an ongoing work, obviously, but the good news is, you know, love does prevail. And if you trust in God, then He will provide the way. He always has.
Bob, no matter how low you sink, as Heidi said, God's there and can take care of you.
And, so, you know, the thing I was thinking, too, as Heidi was talking, is that now I think a lot of churches recognize that when you have a problem like this, you really need a program. So, you know, there's a lot of recovery programs now that are being run out of churches and 12-step programs so that, you know, you can combine, you know, the fact that you have relationship with Christ, but you really have, like you're saying, a disease and you need the help and the process and to go through the steps. So if you're listening, you know, I would really encourage you to, you know, find one of those programs and plug in. So, yeah.
Go to church, too, this morning.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
Go to Highline Community Church this morning at 10:30 if you want to hear Bob Belts, and maybe they can, at that church, plug you into something that will help you like Joe and Heidi got help. Thank you all for being on the
thank
program.
You. It's been great. Thank you.
And thank you for listening. We'll see you next week on You Get the Blessing.
Somebody help, not just anybody help. You know I need someone help. When I was younger, so much younger than today.